Either on top of it or beyond. Last Monday, an Iranian American woman named Anousheh Ansari blasted off in a Russian rocket bound for the International Space Station, achieving her dream of becoming planet Earth's first female space tourist. She reportedly paid $20 million for the privilege. She entered the rocket, she commented, "I'm just so happy to be here." I hope she would be. Adam's opinion about the propriety of sending tourists into space, the NASA flight director admitted, "My personal feeling is, I wish it could be me." How many people would echo those sentiments? How cool it would be to ascend above these earthy strata into the heavenly, to see the beauty of our planet from above and float above in the weightlessness of space. What a priceless phase of the experience. We consider a regular cruise for $2,000. We could send 10,000 people on a cruise for $20 million. Is that responsible stewardship? News article notes Ansari said she expected seeing Earth from space would alter her view of the planet. Said, "You'll see how small and how fragile the Earth is compared to the rest of the universe. It will give us a better sense of responsibility." Perhaps you could start to improve that sense by using the resources more widely. Another woman made the headlines that same day. In contrast to the hitchhiking astronaut, this woman was neither rich nor powerful. An Italian nun at a children's hospital in Sinai's capital was shot and killed on Sunday, hours after a leading Muslim cleric condemned the Pope for his remarks on Islam and violence. The nun was shot in the back of a hospital which served mothers and children. The nun's bodyguard and a hospital worker were also killed. The nun, about 60 in age, spoke fluent Somali and had been working in the hospital since 2002. So sad. Such a senseless and needless crime. Then, in view of Christ's kingdom, which would you rather be? Our high-flying space tourist? For the unidentified devoted nun, helping the poorest and needy. Which life is more fully lived? With the telecom millionaire or the humble nun, the experience of the most fullness, peace, fulfillment. Our Bible reading today, both a socially important and powerful person and a mostly unknown nobody, discovered that faith in Jesus releases God's healing power. When we humble ourselves and yield totally to Him. It's not enough today to affirm the statement, so-and-so is a person of faith. Faith can be a bit of a weasel word unless its object is identified. So it's faith in something, so you must ask, a person of faith in what? Perhaps people can have faith in a nameless higher power, or nature, or Buddha, or just in themselves. But none of these are commendable in the biblical sense of faith. The New Testament thing, faith seeks the right source. The Bible warns against putting our trust in money, our own wisdom or strength, or military might. So in today's culture, it's essential to clarify what a person's faith is in. One person puts their faith in the system, whether social assistance or pension check is going to arrive on time. The healthcare system cover all the medical needs. The sign outside the corner store screams at us to put our faith in X million dollars, 10.0 this morning, actually Super Bowl 7, I guess, to be won in the next lottery. Well, I don't get to have a decision. The media lures trust in those who live their lives over politics or the entertainment world. That's why they call them stars or idols. Our fallen nature sent us to look to sex or pleasure as a source of all the fulfillment. Maybe the opposite of consumption, such as trusting in the latest diet to make us feel more worthy. People even put their trust in superstition, fetishes like a lucky rabbit's foot, horseshoes, other good luck charms, or more directly occult acts such as crystals or horoscopes. Whatever you devote your time and resources to, what guides you in your day-to-day decisions and priorities, that becomes your life. It's got to do with what your heart considers precious. Jesus warned, "For where your treasure is, to Judea, then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came there. Jairus sought the right source. He risked putting his faith in Jesus. His daughter's serious illness drove him to swallow his pride and turn to this new, unseen, unschooled, itinerant preacher who happened to be out of favor with the Jewish leaders and viewed with suspicion and criticism by the Pharisees and other synagogue types. And recall that in small communities before modern times, the place of worship was often the hub of community life. You had a place of leadership there. You were a very important person. By application by those, Jairus was the elected ruler of the local synagogue. He was responsible for supervising worship, running the weekly school, and caring for the building. Many synagogue rulers had close ties to Pharisees. Rightly, therefore, some synagogue rulers had been pressured not to support Jesus. For Jairus to bow down before Jesus was a significant and perhaps daring act of respect and worship. Faith seeks the right source. Jairus turned to Jesus, whatever the call of him. Now here are the implications for evangelism, by the way. Everyone has problems, even those most opposed to Christianity. Everybody has hurts or stress of some kind. They see Jesus' followers as potential means of finding help and hope. Have been nice even the stiffest opponent to inquire the Lord to do that. Often what people profess to believe in and what they really put their faith in are two different things. The distinction may not become apparent until hardship comes. And watch what they actually turn to. You discover what a person really believes when they hit the wall, when they realize their own powerlessness to change the situation. He said, Jairus is likely a VIP in his home community. But his interaction with Jesus shows how desperate he is to get help. By his gestures and his words, he signals how submitted to and dependent upon the Lord he is in order to find assistance. Verses 22b and 23. Seeing Jesus, he fell at his feet and pleaded earnestly with him. Now, RSV has begged him repeatedly. In the Greek, literally, it is called upon him much. Favor of character. Jairus really humbled himself, falling down, repeatedly begging and pleading for Jesus to intervene before his daughter died. Here we see, faith relinquishes all confidence in one's own need and humbly rests solely on God's ability. The same crowd as they have on the way to the ruler's home is a lady who is so low profile she's practically invisible. For 12 years she suffered bleeding. Constant hemorrhage and loss of blood must have left her feeling tired and perpetually weak. Besides, the doctors were giving her the runaround with no effect other than to exhaust her financially. Verse 26. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had, yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. No Medicare or OHIP or health plans back then. When the money was gone, that was the end of the road. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors. The medical art of Judea in that age was in a very crude condition. From the rabbinical books, Life That Notes, the remedy for female hemorrhage is listen to this. Have them dig 7 ditches in which let them burn some cuttings of vines under 4 years old. Have her take in her hand a cup of wine. Put them lead her away from this ditch and make her sit over that. Let them remove her from that and sit her over another. At each removal, you must say to her, "Arise for thy flux." That's it. Well, the only good thing here is a couple of women, isn't it? You call that a treatment? This is an illustration of what this woman suffered. Maybe in that sense, Jesus for her really was a last ditch. True faith requires that we recognize our own powerlessness and cast ourselves entirely upon God's resources. Now, Alcoholics Anonymous, the first step on the road to recovery is to admit we need help. Medical troubles have a way of forcing us to come to grips with our helplessness. When we won't deny it. Sickness is a way of pushing us to the margins. When we are ill, sick in bed at home, life passes us by. Everyone's going places and doing things. Everyone for that. we put our sick away in the institution. There they tend to languish, far from acceptable. Another thing about sickness. Sickness is losing control. Suddenly we're in the hands of this woman of diverse positions. We become not a person, but a patient. We're forced to take off our clothes, wear odd hospital garments. We go through the indignity of having our bodies poked at and prodded. Needles are stuck in us. Blood is drawn. We spend hours lying on a gurney waiting for the doctor to come and give us a test. People come in and tell us to take this, drink that. We're out of control. Sickness reminds us that we are creatures. We are not immortal. Our lives have limits. The greatest limit we face is death. Some of you that have been lying on gurneys or had that poking probably none of you can relate to that. And you start to know a little of what this woman felt. Add to that the fact that even ordinary menstrual bleeding made the woman unclean, cutting her off from society. This woman would have found herself like the lepers in the rejected part of society, lonely and isolated for years. Like Jairus, she humbly comes to Jesus. Both of them acknowledge their lack of power, their need and loneliness. And I'll read and put it like this. Faith is resting in the fact that God has an objective in leading me on the team when I feel useless to Him and I'm burdened up. Faith is resting in the fact that God has an objective in leading me on the team when I feel useless to Him and I'm burdened up. I'm sorry, we don't have slides this morning. I have to run to the third point about faith. If you really truly believe something, it may lead you to be daring in pursuit of God, to act strangely and take steps that others find irrational. Even though the woman was supposed to be isolated, she ventured from the margins right into the center of the swarm that was jostling and pressing around Jesus. Verse 28, she's saying, "I just touched his clothes, I'll be healed." She came up behind him in the crowd and touched his clothes. Verse 29, immediately her bleeding stopped. And she felt in her body that she was free from her suffering. She had to reach out and take a risk in order for it to happen. You had to get right in there in the thick of the people. Those who are saved do not always necessarily play it safe. God's constantly stretching us to grow in the conformity of the beauty and excellence of His Son. Be prepared for growing pains and the discomfort of teething. Faith has somewhat of an edgy nature to it. We're to be obedient to revelations God shows us, even when those next steps lead others to question whether we're a bit crazy. Scott Jones, in a dream workshop at Stratford, shared how the Lord used the dream to prepare him to quit his previous job in house construction to devote more time to ministry. He had a cell phone and saw phone numbers of houses he was working on, and the dream seemed that he was robbing the houses instead of fixing them up. At the same time, God is preparing Scott's wife for the transition. But though in the long run, they can look back and see how it was a great thing, the time it seemed crazy. They hated giving up any sort of income. Chuck Swindoll, your faith ought to get you in trouble at times. If everybody thinks you are nuts, you may be. It's okay if some think you are. You're probably in trouble if no one thinks you are. What happened after the woman touched Jesus' hand was really interesting. See how he senses her contact and seeks her out. Verses 30 to 32. At once Jesus realized the power of God had come. He turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" Between the people crowding against you, the disciples answered, being the logical, sensible types they were. But then he can ask, "Who touched me?" And Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Faith is our response to God's invitation in the relationship. And Jesus didn't see the woman at first. He didn't continue on his way, but kept looking all around to find out who received that flow of healing power. The miracle was only half complete. There was more to be said. Jesus wanted to find and address the individual face to face. All healing, even miraculous healing, is only temporary in that eventually we die and our bodies decay. What matters more to God is we encounter Him, receive Jesus as our ultimate helper and director. Healing miracle in the woman's case was only an entry point, an introduction to the bigger issue of eternal life. So Jesus needed to address her, talk with her, know her. Quite her comments. Faith comes to fulfillment only in a personal encounter with Jesus, in dialogue with Him. Without this, there's no value in miracles, which stagger the imagination. Faith arises, which leads from the looking on the part of Jesus, that seeks and establishes fellowship, to dialogue with Jesus, and then to His word, by which one is dismissed in the peace of God. In this experience, the believer learns that this indicates God's acceptance of him, that God has entered into a fellowship with him, which death will not penetrate. So, God gives you a miracle. Don't waste it. Use it as a gift for you to know Him more than you. For once the woman comes forward, trembling with fear and all those who Jesus' words were packed much into the top of the line. Verse 34. Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be free from your suffering. Break this down slowly. Daughter, part of the family. In close and dear relationship, no longer an outcast or reject as you have been for a dozen years. Your faith has healed you. Literally saved you. Keep safe and sound. Preserved from destruction. Make well out of hope. Restore to health. There are two other words Mark could have used to describe the healing of the disease that kind of referred to just medical healing, but he chose not to use them. Jesus is referring to healing in a more comprehensive sense. Go in peace. The Hebrew equivalent would be shalom, wholeness and soundness of body and soul. Be free from your suffering, your scourging. She must have felt to have that constant energy sink close up after 12 agonizing years. Free with energy to be productive and generative again, feeling well, eager to live, work, dance again. Complete and functional, sprung free to experience life fully with joy and fun. Which of the women, the space tourist of the nun, was most free in? At peace, for instance. Tragic as the shooting of the nun is, if she loved Jesus, one may argue she was making the most practical difference for God in the world. You might even welcome an unexpected dispatch to heaven. The news article notes the astronaut made her millions with her husband manufacturing signal switching software for phone networks. It says, in 2000, the height of telecommunications boom, they sold their suburban Dallas company to Massachusetts-based Sonos Networks Incorporated for $550 million U.S. in Sonos stock. The value of those shares slid from $40 U.S. to under $5 U.S. as the telecom industry collapsed. But her husband said they had, quote, enough opportunity to sell enough shares to earn financial independence, end quote. Well, the timing of some stock sale led to shareholder suits against Sonos and nine people, including, guess who? Andrew Shepard-Clary. The plaintiffs accused her of illegal insider trading in the sale of 26.3 million U.S. in Sonos stock. I don't think she's trying to escape the legal system by going to the scratch. Perhaps our wealthy space tourist isn't having quite as much fun as we thought. Lawsuits are stressful, even if they weren't guilty of insider trading. In a fire of one of those stockholders who saw their portfolio plummet to 1/10, I might resent how she seems to think she has money to burn. Faith, not financial wealth, but a sure path to peace in eternal freedom. Christians have a deeper understanding of healing. The central image for us is not cure, but care. Not wellness, but wholeness. Wholeness is not simply having a body that's no longer diseased. It's also to be at peace with God and neighbor, what Jews call shalom. That all-embracing peace that means that we are at home in God. faith is the capacity God gives to see reality as He sees it, including complete awareness and allowance for His almighty creative power and purpose for it. For this last point, we'll switch back to the synagogue ruler. See how Jesus' actions counter the worldview and accept as reality the supernatural process God wrote from Isaiah. Verse 35. Messengers come to say, "Your daughter is dead. Why bother the teacher anymore?" It's no use. Too late. What's faith say here? Jesus won't accept that. Counters to verse 36. Ignoring what they said, Jesus told the synagogue ruler, "Don't be afraid, just believe." Have faith in Christ. Trust me. Verse 37. Jesus doesn't let anyone follow except his closest disciples. He's starting to create the environment that fosters faith and will facilitate God's dimension breaking through. They arrive at the house. They're the usual wailers and hired flute players pumping out mournful melodies. This was custom. See how Jesus pushes away these norms in 39. Why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep. That's often the reaction when people start operating on a faith basis. They laugh at that. They thought it was being unrealistic. Morbid joke. Once again, does he entertain that view for a moment? No. Verse 40. He put them all out. Kind of go into detail. I remember the same guy that drove the money changers and all those people out of the temple. Maybe Mark told him something again. Perhaps without being too genteel about it. Finally, still acting on faith rather than what was plainly obvious to the senses, Jesus takes the girl by the hand and says to her tenderly, just a couple of words, "Maiden, arise." Praise God. Laughing, waiting. And the words of Jesus echoing the awesome voice of Genesis 1 create the reality to which they refer. Astonishingly, the girl stood and walked with him, hungry and long heat. There was no heat. Sometimes when God's involved, it's better to never mind the facts. Faith perceives the reality of what God is bringing about and proceeds accordingly, however crazy or laughable this may seem to some. Faith gives us eyes to see what God's doing. That clashes with the way the enemy would have us look at things. Schweitzer observes that Jesus views the child in the same way that God does. For him, the coming resurrection is so certain that even now it is more real than the testimony of human eyesight. The same way Jesus views the future kingdom as already active in the present. Sometimes in LWC, I feel like I'm living in a mirror. God is still at work, producing a new creation in people and in the community. The long road to Deep Park was merely an inspiration from some federal workers. Week is becoming concrete, literally. When we set up to buy some land, we were pursuing less than 2 acres until the Lord intervened and blessed us with over 4 acres. What's the next wonder? Are you ready for it? Are you receptive? Or going to react with the hard-nosed disciples and say something brilliantly obvious, like, "You see the people around you on every side and they say, 'Who is touching me?'" Texas all tell this story about the amazing power of God when you rely on Him in faith. Says, we were in seminary in Dallas in 1959, and boy, it was hot. Cynthia and I said, "We really need an air conditioner," because we didn't have one in this little apartment. So I said to Cynthia, "I'll tell you what let's do. Let's not tell anybody about our needs. Let's just pray." We do a lot of strange things like that in seminary, you know. You just trust God and you don't say anything to anybody. And so we did that. Winter time. Spring came. Still praying. We went home for a quick visit to Houston. We were staying with our folks. Out of the clear blue, a phone call came from a guy who lived across town who had known us years ago. He said, "Chuck, we've got an air conditioner. It's almost new. Could you use it?" walked around the wall 6 times, and then 7 times. Is it really impossible? He brought it over, put it in our car trunk, and he took it back to Dallas, stuck it in the window, and it worked all those 4 years there. It was fantastic. Impossible situation, which we didn't announce, and God put it in an impossible way. Just like God told Joshua to take care of it. Hey,